But no, Parliament would not agree. And when Charles sought to levy a tax anyway, he was resisted by stout country gentlemen like John Hampden, who was brought up on charges of not paying the ship tax. It was a tiny amount. And Hampden, in fact, was found guilty in the sense that he had violated the law, but fined the tiniest amount. For as it was said, paying that little shilling would not have ruined him financially, but to be coerced to pay it, in contrast to the common law, would have made him a slave. And by 1640, Charles and Parliament were at such loggerheads that war broke out. And this war, this civil war between Parliament and the forces of the king, between the Royalists and the Roundheads, brought to the fore a country gentleman, Oliver Cromwell, of remarkable military ability, strong Protestant beliefs, a Puritan in its most Calvinistic form, who believed that he had been predestined for this role, and whose forces, the Ironsides, composed of strongly believing Protestants, convinced of the justice of their cause and that God was on their side, brought victory. And in 1649, the trial of Charles, the king, before Parliament. At the trial, Charles sat with his hat upon his head, a statement that Parliament and this whole business was illegal, and he would not show it respect. Legal or not, above the law or not, Charles was found guilty. Ungodly persons put their trust in him, as Cromwell said. And he was sentenced and put to death. So Parliament could not only control the purse strings, they could remove a king and execute him. Cromwell established a republic. But one of the lessons that our founders learned from this experience of the English Revolution was that it is easier to declare a republic than to maintain one. And as Lord Protector of England, Cromwell was increasingly a dictator. A gloomy time, brutal repression, a revolt in Ireland, all kinds of censorship laws. Until by his death in 1658, and after the brief two-year attempt of his son to continue the republic, with relief, the British welcomed back the monarchy. Christmas could be celebrated again in all its grandeur. And the myth was that nothing had really changed in a sense, that the Republic had just been an empty period. But the Stuart kings could not learn their lesson. They were no wiser than James, the wisest fool in Christendom. And both Charles II and his son James continued to run up against Parliament in their attempt to govern as absolute monarchs. And both Charles II and James showed very disturbing tendencies towards Catholicism until, as heir to the throne, James announced his conversion to Rome. For English liberty did not mean religious tolerance. To be a Catholic was to threaten the very liberty of England. And so, on Catholicism, James II would be driven into exile. The crown offered to his grown daughter, the wife of William of Holland, a Protestant. And in 1688, Parliament showed for a second time that it could make and break kings, and that a king who threatened the liberties of Englishmen, who abandoned his trust to govern for the welfare of all, was no legitimate king. And it was not only the right, it was the duty of an Englishman to overthrow him. In order to receive the crown of England, William and Mary had to accept a declaration of rights, reasserting all those liberties found in the Great Charter, reasserting rights like trial by jury, reasserting the right of every subject who is a Protestant to bear arms. A declaration of rights as the foundation of government. This revolution of 1688, which established the absolute authority of Parliament, its ability to determine who would be king, was called the Glorious Revolution. In the words of the historian David Hume, it ushered in the reign of liberty in England. It was the prototype and guiding spirit for the founders of our country. In terms of chronology, they stood closer to the events of 1688 than we, Americans of today, stand to our own Civil War. It was the justification, the cause, the historical precedent for the decision that they would make in 1776 to declare their independence. And to those stirring events, to that chapter in the history of liberty, we will turn in our next lecture.